Guys, if you haven't checked up on our social media recently, what have you been doing? I'm at Nick Hardwick, and Jamie is at jamie.hardwick. That's J-A-Y-M-E with a period and then Hardwick, which is not to be confused with the other Jamie Hardwick, who I tagged a little while ago on Instagram, and she notified me that you may want to get this straight, bud. Your wife may be pissed at you. That earned me the Worst Husband of the Week award. Sorry, babe. Anyway, you guys know that Lose Like Alignment is going off. I'm sure you've seen some of the ads circulating. Hundreds of men now are losing staggering amounts of weight on a daily basis. It's been so awesome to see. And of course, I had no idea that life would turn into this for me or for us. I just had to get the information out of my head, share it with others, see if it could help people reclaim their lives. And lo and behold, it has. And I am just really grateful to be a part of this amazing team. And the most fulfilling thing for me and the program is the weekly interactions that we get through the accountability network. So sign up for that. It is awesome to get personal connections and have conversations and get to understand who people are, what their challenges are, and assist on a very personal basis, on a weekly basis. So as this was all going on, we're getting crazy amounts of requests from the ladies wondering if this program is good for them too. And for me, I said, sure, yeah, it is. But really, since the beginning, I've tried to get Jamie to give my plan a try, and she would try it for a day or two and then basically tell me it wasn't for her. And finally, listening to the requests on social media and through email for a female version, and then getting some feedback back from females who were actually in the program and taking that into account, and then asking and not telling Jamie what can make this plan work for her and for other females, she went, took the parts from the men's program that she liked, modified it to accommodate the female body and your guys' individual preferences, and gave it a try. And I tread lightly saying this to her. Thankfully, she's not around right now. But it's been super cool watching her own this program. She has gained control back over the food, has reset her hunger cues, and has lost the weight she's been trying to lose, really, forever. I know. Believe me, I don't think she has anything to lose either. But still, she's getting to a place where she feels great about her body. And that is important. In fact, I just get out of the bathroom and she says, I've lost this weight, but Nick, I've lost an inch off of my waist. She's taken measurements. So we sent the adjustments back to our design team, and voila, the Lose Like a Lady program is born. We would love for you guys to join the team. If you want to know more, all food preferences and eating styles work within the framework we provide in both the men's and the women's program. We do provide body weight only workouts and daily activities known as every hour on the hour exercises, EHO. But guess what? As we tell everyone, the exercise is the least important component of the plan. It's not required to lose weight. If you don't want to exercise, or you've got your own form of exercise that you would rather do, do that. We are never going to discourage that. This program will help you figure out what works best for you. You're going to learn appropriate caloric loads for the day and per meal. You're going to learn how to match your caloric intake with daily activity levels. You're going to break free from the having to eat a meal every 3 hours cycle. It really is an incredibly empowering experience. Also, the program helps build healthy self-care habits that make the program sustainable for life. And it's wonderful when you figure out that the more you take care of yourself, the healthier, the easier it is to make good choices when it comes to food, when it comes to exercise. And the best part about the program that a lot of people find is it's 4 weeks on and 2 weeks off of the plan. That is what we call a diet break. How many programs encourage you to not do the diet? We do that so you're going to build trust with yourself. You're going to take the skills you learned and you're going to put them to test in the real world. The whole process, it's incredibly empowering. When you reclaim your health, you really do reclaim your life. Join our teams. Sign up at hardwick.life. It's like hardwick.com, but hardwick.life. And use the code podcast20 for 20% off the order. And by the way, you can use that code forever on anything site-wide forever. And we want you to know that we're here for you. You can email me directly at nick@nickhardwick.com. I do. I get back to everybody. Try it. Try me. I'll get back to you. Anything you have. Show recommendations, any questions, any support, any criticism. We're here for that. Throw everything my way. You need help modifying this program to suit your particular needs? All you got to do is ask. We've helped hundreds of people make this program work in their lives, and you can too. All right, guys, back to the show. Check it out, hardwick.life, podcast 20 for 20% off, and we hope to see you on the network soon. Love you guys. All right, guys, welcome into the Hardwick Life podcast. I'm your host, Nick Hardwick. Joining us today, very special guest, Nick Shaw. Not only because we share the same first name, but he's a really awesome dude, very innovative. He's the co-founder of Renaissance Periodization, RP. It's a multi-million dollar health and fitness company that has improved the lives of hundreds of thousands of clients around the world. His story and the story of RP has appeared in a Forbes feature story, which chronicled Renaissance Periodization's rise from a small business into an influential tech company with an industry-leading app that is available through the Apple's App Store and Google Play. Nick has also helped to coach numerous world-class athletes, including CrossFit Games champions, international medalists in weightlifting, UFC fighters, Navy SEALs, and Olympians, and Bob Harper, which is super cool. Found that out in his new book, Fit for Success. Nick and his team at RP have sold hundreds of thousands of books over the years, ranging from nutrition, training, recovery, and creating healthy habits. And I mentioned the one that he's got out now, Fit for Success. Just got through it. Great book. I highly, highly recommend it. You guys are going to love this episode. Nick is a wealth of knowledge and inspiration and somebody who just attacks life with a great zeal. So thank you for listening. Here's Nick Shaw.
What is up, man? How are you?
Oh, man, I'm good, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I just got done with your amazing introduction. I was given all the praise for the book, Fit for Success. So you sent me a copy, which I was super happy about, but I ended up buying an audiobook because, you know, got to support my brother. So it's and awesome job. It was really well done. I loved it. I love how you laid it out. So fantastic. Congrats. We'll get to all that, but I'm sure you've got life is like crazy for you right now.
Yeah, you know, life is always crazy for lots of people, right? Yeah, it's you know, good problems to have. You know, we're busy. It's just kind of that time of year. You know, warmer weather is coming around. Man, I was gonna say I wanted to lead off with this. Man, I almost had to bail on you. You're so jacked now. I was like, I can't get on the podcast. You're gonna make me look bad, dude. Like, come on.
I'm not jacked. I'm getting lean. I guess jacked. I mean, The Rock is jacked, right? So we got to be able to differentiate. The Rock's jacked. I quit on that plan a little bit ago. I can't get after it like I used to. Like, my body's just, I'm 39, I know it seems so young, but God, I'm just breaking down because of all the years of abuse, unfortunately.
10 years in the NFL will do that, right?
Yeah, exactly. What's your fitness program? What are you into now?
So I need some goal. I need something to train for. So right now, and it'll rotate a little bit throughout the year. So again, I come from like a bodybuilding, powerlifting background, but you know, right now at the end of May, the workout Murph is coming up.
Yeah.
So oh, yeah. I like, that gives me something to train for. So I'll take a couple months and, you know, kind of switch my focus a little bit, get ready for that. You know, after that, usually I'll lift like 4 times a week. You know, I'm always going to lift, just part of who I am. But, you know, the other part, you know, I'm probably just doing a little bit more cardio and stuff now. Like, I'll throw in a day of, you know, kind of like CrossFit style training just to get ready for Murph. And I'm actually heading out to Rich Froning's gym later today. I'm going to drive up there. And I imagine we'll probably be doing some really crazy stuff up there for a couple of days. So it's kind of helpful.
Oh, that's awesome. Are you and Rich buddies?
Yeah, well, we work with him. He's an RP guy, and I haven't been up there in a couple of years just because of, you know, COVID last year and all that stuff. Right. So, it's a little bit of a road trip for me, but not too bad.
Who's the teacher and who's the student in that relationation?
Because
I think you both have a lot to share, right? You both have a lot to offer.
When it comes to things like work ethic, he's definitely the teacher for sure, and it is really cool. Actually, so when you were on the RP podcast before, you know, you had mentioned, you know, someone like Drew Brees, just how hard he worked.
Yes.
And I sort of relate, you know, Rich Froning in that guard, because he's, you know, kind of like the Michael Jordan of the sport of CrossFit. And you just see how much he trains and just how much he really dedicates his life to it. It is really inspiring. You know, we help him a little bit with his nutrition, but, you know, in other areas, I'm definitely, you know, looking up to him to be like, all right, well, you know, what does it really take to be at the top?
Is he just meticulous with everything? And is he still really getting after it? I mean, is his body holding up and he's doing well?
Yeah, I mean, he's still training, you know, 3-4 hours a day, many wow. times of the week. Like, he's quite meticulous with things. He takes, you know, recovery and all that stuff very seriously. You know, he's got a great gym in Cookeville, Tennessee. He's got a great, you know, basically giant pole building not too far, 100 meters from his house, that is better than 95% of CrossFit gyms out there. Like, it's, you know, it's got everything. So, man, it really truly is his craft. You know, if you could imagine, you know, someone like Drew Brees, you know, probably just watches hours and hours and hours of film a day. It's kind of like Rich Froning just being in the gym, like, just, you know, talking fitness, you know, nutrition, recovery, all that. I imagine it's probably somewhat similar.
Oh, good. Well, good for you. That's going to be a fantastic getaway.
Totally.
Yeah, and I hope you guys are at least documenting a little bit of it.
Yeah, well, you know, a couple of years ago, we were up there, and we actually had a PGA golfer up there, and we did some filming and stuff, because Scott Stallings lives in Knoxville, so not too far away, and so that was kind of cool. But yeah, I think we're just kind of hanging out, training a little bit for a couple of days, so, you know.
Good, and just keep it buddies.
Yeah, I'm sure I'm going to come back probably half broken, so.
Here I am as a voyeur. I'm like, come on, man, you abuse your relationship so I can watch some film of you guys working out. Yeah. Let's get after it here. That's hilarious.
Yeah, totally.
Nick, let's back it up a little bit, because I want to know about your personal story and how you got to where you are, because, you know, it clicked reading the book, and we never really put these things together, right? It's like, you have to wait to be told to almost put them together. It's like, oh, the work ethic and all the personal development over the years has allowed you and has allowed RP to really transcend in the game and go to a completely different level. But that's a lot of work and that's a lot of effort. I want to know about you, and I want to know where you came from and how you got to where you are, really an industry leader.
So I always like to go back to high school, and I think I sort of stumbled upon this idea. That's probably the best term for it. I kind of stumbled upon it, but I was not very genetically gifted when it comes to athletics. You know, I'm 5'9". I was probably like 150 pounds in high school. I mean, I know you shared your story and stuff, like, you know, smaller kid who eventually got into it. And, you know, I'm like 215 now or whatever, but I never had those, you know, just great genetics or anything like that. But there was one summer, so I was a cross country runner, and our coach is like, hey, you guys need to run 100 total miles this summer from, you know, the end of school till when we start up practice in the fall. And I was like, okay, cool. Yeah, totally. And we had a 9-person team the year before. I was 8th or 9th the year before, freshman year. But I was, you know, at least kind of thought I was maybe a hard worker or whatever. I was just like, all right, well, I'm just going to go do it. And I showed up day one to practice sophomore year, and I was running with the top guys from the year before. And it turns out that I was really the only person that had run the 100 miles over the summer. And man, this light bulb went off in my head, and I go, well, if I just kind of do what I'm supposed to, and, you know, maybe kind of going above and beyond what other people are willing to do, the people that might be blessed a little bit more, well, I'm not saying that I'm going to, you know, pass them, but I can at least maybe hold up, you know, I can stay with them a little bit. And that was really this idea that always stuck with me. I was like, man, I'm not going to have these great genetics or whatever, but I can probably just outwork a lot of people. And that's going to probably get me at least decently far in life. And, you know, not to mention, I love the idea of working out. I love the idea of lifting, of, you know, anything fitness related, because, I mean, you know how it is, but in fitness or even in sports, there's always something more you can be doing to push yourself or get a little bit better. You know, you can run a little bit faster. You can, you know, do some more reps. You can add some more weight to the bar, like whatever it is, there's always something more to be doing. And those are probably the two main things that I learned early on that have really stuck with me ever since.
So, cross-country runners are really interesting beast to me. One, that's not my makeup by nature. I'm a thick ankle guy, cankles, and my knees spill down into those. So not really genetically blessed in terms of that. But it is interesting, because reading your book, listening to your book, and all of the authors that you kind of cite, we're into the same stuff. Like we're in all of that self-help, personal growth space. And it seems like people who write, a lot of times the books that I'm really interested in are cross-country athletes. And it's like Alex Hutchinson, I think you referenced him, Endure, David Epstein, who wrote the book Range and The Sports Gene. He's a former distance runner or former track athlete. And there's something about cross-country runners and work ethic and tying that all together and the personalities. I don't know what it is. Can you put your finger on that at all?
Probably that they're slightly insane. Who wants to go run? Yeah. Who wants to go run that long? You know, here's the thing, like, man, I don't really love running now. I mean, I did kind of back in the day just because I thought that like I could maybe be okay at it. And I never wanted to be average. So I was like, all right, well, this is maybe the thing that I can, you know, push myself really hard at and be okay. And track and field was more of my thing. Cause like I was a little bit too big and too muscular to be like really top level cross country runner, but like I couldn't sprint with those top guys either. So I'm like, basically, what are the events that people hate the most? Like, what are the worst possible things I can feel? And everyone's like, easy 400 meter, 800 meter. And I'm like, boom, that's what I'm doing. Listen, I couldn't do a field event. And people are like, hey, you should try, you know, such stuff. I'm like, listen, just let me run. I'm like, just get me out there. You know, the gun goes off, just let me go. And I'm like, I'm going to pick the hardest things. That's the only thing I stand a chance in. So that's kind of, yeah, it really is a special breed because you think about it, like, you know, you go run, maybe even lifting, I guess, a little bit, but I mean, you're basically inflicting pain upon yourself for no reason other than
to see how far you can go. And I think that's one of the common themes is how far can I go based on my genetics? And then how far can I push those genetics with the mental side of things? And I think that's what Alex gets into. I think that's what you get into. I think that's what David Epstein eventually gets into is like, yes, our genetics are set. We can maximize those genetics. We can get to our genetic potential. But then beyond that, there's the area that's the gray area where is this genetics or is this mental? And do we have psychological barriers that we have to get over? And I think the 400, the 800 and the mile are those ones that are right on the cusp of you get that perfect blend of physiology and psychology right in there because it's so short, your body's kind of capacities are built right around those ranges. And it's torture. Those are torturous races.
It is torture. So probably some of the hardest workouts I've ever done in my entire life are a couple things. So when it was track and field, it was repeat 400 meters. You'd like, you know, hey, go run. You got to do this in like 60 seconds. You maybe have like 60 seconds rest and then you're going again. And you do, you know, I don't know, 4, 6, 8 of them, something like that. And it's just, man, that's tough. And then, you know, when I got like pretty hardcore into lifting, I kept thinking I did a 20 rep max back squat before. And I want to say it was, you know, like 345 pounds or something like that. And like, that made me think back to like repeat 400 meters of just like how awful these things are. So there's just, yeah, there's something to it, man. And, you know, honestly, that's kind of what really led me into RP because I always loved fitness. And then I met, you know, my buddy, Dr. Mike at University of Michigan. And, you know, he eventually ended up going to school to get his PhD in sport physiology. And what is sport physiology? You know, at East Tennessee State, probably the best program in the country for it. What do? They learn how to take athletes and literally make them as good as humanly possible. What are the most efficient evidence-based practices to get every ounce of potential out of their athletes? And that's just really cool. It's just a really, really cool concept, especially when you're already into athletics yourself. You're like, wow. You know, now imagine taking someone that is pretty gifted and now give them, you know, great work ethic and give them, you know, the most efficient evidence-based practices. Like that is when you really reach those just unbelievable heights of human accomplishment.
When did you and Dr. Mike meet? I know at University of Michigan, what were you studying? What year were you and what else were you into at the time?
So I just kind of made my switch away from running and was like, man, I need something. So I was just really into lifting at the time. I met him in the student weight room. I was a sophomore. He was a senior. So he was 2 years ahead of me. And, you know, picture a student weight room at university, like pretty much the only thing people are doing are curls, right?
Yeah.
That's pretty much it. The squat rack, like everyone's allergic to the squat rack, of course.
Yeah, don't need that.
No, you don't need that, of course. No. You just got to be able to curl the, 12 or whatever. But I see this guy, he's 5'6", short, stocky guy, just squatting 405, perfect form all the way down. And I'm like, what is going on here? This is unheard of. So, immediately just start chatting with him, whatever. And he's like, hey, you should, join the powerlifting club here at Michigan. I'm like, done. Like, I don't even know what powerlifting is, but sure. Like, I just
signed me up.
Yeah, I missed that competitive,
can I do that? Like,
yes, exactly. Yep. And so, man, that's really what started it. And, he's kind of been like my mentor all along and, kind of helped shape, what are the best things to do training, nutrition wise. And that was 2007.
Wow. And then, so when did the idea of RP get born? And obviously, you guys complement each other very well. And so it started as you two?
Yeah. So 2009, I graduated from University of Michigan. He was 2 years ahead of me. So he had just finished his master's at Appalachian State. He's like, hey, I'm moving out to New York City for a little bit. I'm going to, just train people in person. And it was like, hey, you should come out and interview. I'm like, cool. I've never been to New York City before in my life. I don't know what I'm going to do after I graduate. Done. And so, we both got the job. We were out there and, we were just training a lot. Literally fitness was our life 24/7, 365. He left after a year to go back to get his PhD. I stayed. And that was really kind of when the idea of RP was born, because he needed help with a bunch of clients he had online. And I was mostly training people in person. So yeah, it really was a good synergy all along. And, I guess, thank you for pointing that out. We do complement each other pretty well. So he's, kind of the brains of the operation, designs all the products and all that. But the things that he's not good at are probably just being organized and, being really punctual and on top of things. And, that's probably where, me being very kind of type A comes into. So it's a good compliment there for sure. That was 2010 or 11, we'll call it.
That's one thing I've noticed with our interactions is that you're very well organized. You're very punctual. And I would be more like Dr. Mike. It's like, oh, I got this idea. I don't know how to do any of it. And so I was an early, I guess I didn't realize how early I was into finding RP. And I mean, I had the spreadsheets and I bought one for me, bought one for my wife. I think we bought like a gain, a lean, it's a maintain. Sure, we got them all. We got the whole stack. And I don't know if I still have them in my filing cabinets, but like the files of them, I was like, that was pretty early on. But you guys have developed now. I mean, it was you and Dr. Mike, but now from my understanding, there's how many of you guys, 40, 45 staff members or something like that? It's turned into quite the operation.
Yeah. Definitely started him and I just doing online stuff. So I was training people in person and I was like, man, I just can't keep this up. It's not really sustainable. And he's like, you need to get into online coaching. And this is before, nowadays, pretty much everyone's an online coach or whatever.
It.
Yeah. Everyone thought it. But, a decade ago, not that many people did it. I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. I think that sounds like a pretty good idea. And I kind of opened up my eyes and like, oh, like this is really cool. You can help a lot more people doing things virtually or remote. And then we hooked up with Chad Wesley Smith at Juggernaut Training Systems. And he was like, hey, you guys should do an ebook. Like we sell a lot of ebooks on his site. He's like, you guys should do one. And we did. And then that was another eye opener because it allowed us to reach thousands of people pretty much all at once with an ebook. And we were like, oh, there's probably something here. Like, probably onto something. And so that's when we both kicked around the idea of like, how do we take the one-on-one coaching model and how do we kind of make that into more or less a product that people can get? And that's when those funky, clunky, ugly looking Excel sheets were born. And we're like, all right, let's just give it a try. Like, who knows if people will really like it, but it did. They worked really well. People got really great results and it allowed us just to scale. And then with that scale allowed us to bring in more coaches because now we are reaching more people. So more people wanted more help. And just needed to expand over time because, early on I was literally doing all customer service, all everything. And that's just a terrible idea. Like you just need help. And again, like once you're able to get in help and people that, know way more than I do, they're able to come in and do things that they're really good at. So it's really cool to see.
Yeah, they're good at it. They also enjoy it. And the things that you don't enjoy and you're probably not that good at, it's like,
yes.
let somebody else handle those and then it's really going to sail. I tell you what's cool and what's really for me inspiring is that you just started, right? Like you just started and it's not a perfect product to begin with. And you're like, it's clunky, it's ugly, it's whatever, but here it's effective. This will work. And then I think the fun thing for, as kind of a voyeur on the outside is watching you guys grow and watching the business grow. And like, so having early adopters and then they're like, what's next? And then you guys just continue to evolve and grow and change and adapt. And now you've got RP 2.0, which it is, it's awesome. It's fantastic. Did you ever think you were going to be in the app space, that this was going to be the thing? I mean, did you ever envision even that it was going to be big? Like it is, as big as you guys are.
No, I mean, you know, Mike and I kind of joke about this all the time. Yeah, we just thought that we'd be, you know, just working with athletes and stuff, you know, like bodybuilders or whatever, helping them get ready for bodybuilding shows. And like, we would have totally been cool with that just because we really like doing it and all that. Like, just our passion is what we love. And yeah, you know, it really did sort of organically grow. And, you know, we were kind of fairly early on in the Instagram thing as well. And, you know, that definitely helped catapult things with people sharing the results on social media. And yeah, it's become this really cool thing that, you know, we're super proud of, super, super grateful for. You know, we just want to keep helping people, and just that ability to scale has, you know, allowed us to go from, you know, maybe 100 or so people that we could work with one-on-one to, you know, potentially now hundreds of thousands of people. So it's really cool. We never thought it would be anything like this. Certainly I never thought I'd be running, I guess, like a software, you know, company, which is really funny to kind of say now. But yeah, it's a whole different ball game. But I tell you what, in terms of the software development, so this is where it kind of ties back to that original mindset that we started off the conversation with. When you're in software development, there's no finish line. It's just always, what can you do to get better? How can you improve? Let's get the feedback. Let's hear what people have to say. What do people like? What do they dislike? What are the things that need to be improved? And it goes back to that whole fitness mentality. It's like, all right, cool. You know, imagine you were doing a bodybuilding show and you step on stage and, you know, the judges are like, your arms suck, your legs suck, you know, and you're like, okay, well, now I know what I need to work on. So it's the same idea, really, at the end of the day. It's just what needs to get better, what needs to be improved, and you just go out and do it. And then you just keep repeating that process over and over. There's no end point. It's just keep getting better all the time.
And I love what you said too, because it does seem like one of the tenets of the company is, how many people can we help? Let's just help people. And when you keep that as the focus instead of growth and revenue, then it remains really genuine and authentic. And you're just helping people, which I think is a really cool philosophy to keep in mind as you are growing as a business.
Yeah, I mean, you know, take our YouTube channel, for example. So Dr. Mike pretty much does all the videos now, but I mean, you literally have hundreds upon hundreds of hours of just free content. You know, if you want to learn anything about growing muscle, losing fat, nutrition, all that stuff, you know, he kind of started it last year when COVID sort of hit. And, you know, I mean, it's grown by, like, you know, 150,000 subscribers in like the last year. Like, it's just pretty crazy. And again, it's just all free content. I mean, the cool thing about YouTube is, you know, I guess you can monetize it a little bit.
You can.
Yeah. But yeah, it's just like, hey, we're not charging. And we actually had a, you know, RP Plus kind of like subscription platform. We're just like, you know what? When COVID hit last year, we're like, dude, there's going to be a lot more people watching virtual stuff and all that. We're like, this is free. And we're like, let's just make it free for the rest of the year. The end of the year hit. We're like, all right, this is just going to be free forever. Because now we're just taking that content and putting it on YouTube. Because now, you know, why not just let pretty much everyone have access to it if they want? And the thing that we learned, which it almost seems counterintuitive, but, you know, if you read some other books, there's a real good one. John Lee Dumas, I think is his name. He's a real big podcaster and stuff. But he has a book that just came out not too long ago. And he kind of talks about it like, that's actually how you get started. You just give people lots of free content and they watch it and they enjoy it. And then sooner or later, they're like, huh, I really like these people. What else do they do? And then they go look into the other stuff. And, you know, maybe they get the app or they get an ebook or something. And yeah, it was kind of counterintuitive because we had people tell us early on, like, hey, you can't give away all your secrets. And we're like, okay, I don't know what that means. We don't really have any secrets.
Right. Right. Like,
we just want to get out, you know, get it out there. Like, let's just give people this information and, you know, people are going to like it and they'll probably end up supporting you in the long run.
And that's kind of what I view a lot of it is. They're supporting you. They're cheering you on. It's like, yeah, give me the app. I'll do that because I'm tracking anyway. And maybe I'll have a little bit of help. And I understand now your personalities. There's actual humans back there, which is really cool. Yeah. And I like your philosophies. And I agree with a lot of the principles. And what you said is there's no secrets. That's a funny thing in the diet world, right? Because everyone's got the proprietary, this is the secret. It's like, no, the secret is you eat less than you burn. It's not that complicated.
Yeah. The secret really is you stick to it. That's the secret at the end of the day, yes. Right? You stick to it and you do that long enough, you're going to have pretty good results.
You know what stands out to me about the book, and it's this kind of thought just hit me recently as you see people physically transform, whether bodybuilding or losing weight and having a weight loss transformation or whatever that is. I think what people realize when they do that physically is you get this, it's visceral. It's a feeling because you feel your body getting stronger or getting smaller and getting lighter and looking better. But I think what people realize is if they put together a plan and they're very consistent in sticking with the plan, and if they fail, they try to figure out why they failed and then continue to move forward and just keep chipping away little by little every single day, that eventually they look back months, years from the time they started and they go, oh, wow, that was cool. Even if it's a month in on the program and they're losing weight or they're building muscle or whatever they're doing, then all of a sudden they go, oh, I can do that for everything. So the book for me, Fit for Success, makes so much sense because probably in your head, all of this started with the body too. And then it goes to, oh, now I realize I'm capable in all of these other areas. Let me share this with people. And then again, it's back to helping people, which is tremendous.
I mean, 100%, man. So well said. I don't have a lot to add. I agree with that wholeheartedly, 100%. I nailed it, spot on.
Yeah, I think it's the easiest place for people to start understanding how to take control of their life is taking control of their physical being. And then once that happens, once you get control of the body, the mind starts coming into better balance. And then you feel like I can accomplish anything that I put my mind to. It's a really empowering thing. I think bodybuilding, transformation, whatever it is. So you guys had a hell of a year. I mean, this was quite the year for you. 2020 moving into 2021. So from like now back a year, your wife Lori got diagnosed with the most aggressive form of breast cancer. Mm-hmm. The pandemic hit like immediately. I think in the book you said you got to go to one treatment with her.
Yeah.
And then you thought you'd write a book and homeschool your kids all all at once. How did you manage it all? And have you looked back? Have you been able to look back at all yet and go, whew, that was interesting.
You know, a little bit recently, cause we just kind of passed like the year mark from when like everything started last year. So definitely like just a little bit of reflection and being like, holy crap, if we can get through that, I think we're on the right track. But yeah, it was. And I mean, you nailed it perfectly because you talk about, you know, nutrition and if you could start there with the fitness aspect, because those are all things that you can control. And yeah, they're, you know, they can be difficult to control if you're just getting started, you don't know what you're doing, whatever. But you know, you take someone that's never exercised before in their life, well, what if they just started going for a little walk each day? I mean, certainly pretty much anyone can do that, right? And like, yep, it just gains this little bit of control that you now have. And then it does, it builds some momentum, it builds some success. And you just want to keep doing a little bit more. And then maybe it's like, oh, well, maybe, you know, I'm walking numerous times a week. What if I, you know, did something else? Or, you know, I started watching what I eat. Like, these are all things you control. So I think it all ties into that. And one of the things of the book, so this is, you know, arguably, I think probably the most important thing, but if you just start to take some elements of control back in your life and you have that internal locus of control, where like, you know, you can make a difference. The things that you do really matter. It just, I think, really has this huge psychological impact on people. Because again, it gets the ball rolling. It gets you started. It gets you believing. It gives you some hope. And when you have these things, it's a very powerful tool to just keep progressing, keep pushing you forward, really, no matter what it was. And for us, it was like, yeah, we have all this bad stuff going on in 2020, it would be really easy to just sit back and, you know, kind of play the victim, woe is me. But where does that get you? It's like, no, okay, so this has happened. Okay, what can we do about it? We can't magically fix things overnight, but what are a couple little things we can do today? All right, well, you know, we're going to make sure we eat dinner as a family. And, you know, hey, let's, hey, all this bad stuff is going on, whatever. All right, it is what it is, but all right, we're all still here. We, you know, we can hang out as a family. We can do all these things. Like, all right, let's just be grateful for that. And again, it's just, I know it sounds really small and almost trivial, but it just takes something. It just takes something, a little something to get you moving in that direction. If you just keep doing that, keep building on it, progressing from there, I think that's the way to go.
How's Lori's health?
She's doing really great now, by the way. Yeah, she's doing great. Usually I normally lead with that. Yeah, she's great, man. Knock on wood. She's good. Been done since, I think, like August, the treatment. So, I think it's like the first year or so, as long as everything's free and clear then, like you start to get back into just normal kind of odds of anything like that. She also, let me also add, you know, again, where things are in her control, man, she took the most aggressive form of like, how do you fix this stuff? And she was right on top of it. She was like, no, let's do it. And she was very quick to make sure that all this stuff was done. So she did everything in her power that she could. And, you know, I'll also add that, you know, I run a fitness company, but my wife is way healthier than I am, just like the way she eats and stuff like that. So yeah, man, it's, that's one of those things where you get that news and you look at someone that's, you know, really the pinnacle of health, and just really makes you stop and think. So yeah, it's a tough year, but we made it through it. We're still all here and moving on.
You know, when you mentioned that she's the pinnacle of health, she's done everything she could leading up to the point of diagnosis to be as healthy and live as long as possible. Yet still there is that. And then on the other side of that, there's people who are like, well, you can look at that and go, well, what's the use in trying? And, but she's done everything up to that moment. So when something does happen, because something's always going to happen in our life, right? There's always going to be a moment that slams you in the face that you probably hoped you were ready for, whether it's a challenge, a big moment of adversity, or it's a huge opportunity that comes your way. If you weren't doing all of your things and handling your business and doing your work, that opportunity is not going to get captured, or that adversity, that challenge is going to crush you. And so she was ready for the opportunity of the challenge, I guess.
Yeah, just real quick on that story, I definitely do remember a time where it wasn't all that long after she had been diagnosed, and we were out, I think it was just the two of us, you know, like brunch or whatever, and, you know, she had just gotten this news, so it's still pretty fresh in her mind, and it would have been very easy, because I remember having this conversation just a little bit, and, you know, there's this table sitting next to us of people that are the exact opposite of what you would consider the pinnacle of health. And, you know, it's just, it's hard not to kind of take that mindset of like, well, how is this fair? Like, there is no fairness. Like, it's not a you know, right or wrong fairness thing. It's just, hey, like, who knows? It's luck of the draw a little bit. Who really knows? Like, we don't really understand all that. But it's really tough not to slip into that mindset. And I distinctly remember having a conversation. It was like, yeah, like, we could go that route, but where does that route get you? It doesn't really get anywhere good. So why focus on it? Like, it has happened, but again, it goes back to that internal locus of control. All right, well, now what can we do? What can we do to get moving back in the right direction? And that's where we ended up focusing, you know, the vast majority of our time and efforts to help get through it.
And I think it's cool that you say that too, because people would look at you and all the success you have and go, well, he's just impermeable to all of the barrage and the negativity that is around us, right? And you even had a moment where you have a moment, right? You feel weak, vulnerable, not in control, and this isn't fair. How did this happen? I've done my part. You still lost that game, right? And so, but I think the cool part is that you've trained yourself to then go, no, I'm going to positive self-talk my way out of this, that I'm going to focus on what I can control. And so it's not that you're perfect, that, hey, we've got this perfect mindset built and it's just ever ready and it's indefensible, or it's a great position of defense that nothing's going to get through, because all of us have weaknesses and vulnerabilities and emotional letdowns, and we're stressed and tired and anxious and sick and whatever. We get all those. But then you still get up and you say, what can I control? And coming back to the book a little bit, what you can control is your work. You can control what you do on a daily basis from that moment forward.
Yeah, yeah. So I have one other example that I think will fit really well on your podcast here. So again, like the idea of, you know, really anyone being perfect is ridiculous, right? I mean, as far from perfect as, you know, I can imagine. I make mistakes all the time and all that. So one example that I'll give is, like, for the longest time, again, like Lori would call me out on this quite frequently. So, okay, I need to preface that with saying she's an Ohio State alum.
Okay, yeah.
I'm a Michigan alum.
I don't know how that got approved by any state that you got married in. I'm not sure what was going on there.
It was in Manhattan. I don't know. Maybe they overlooked.
Okay, they don't know.
They don't care about football in Manhattan. But, anyways, like, I don't know, man. I grew up, born and raised in Michigan, went to school in Michigan, like, just love Michigan football, worked for the team for 3 years. Like, I've just always been a huge Michigan football fan, and would wear it on my sleeve at times, many times, way too much, in fact. And so she would always call me out at it. She's like, you are an insane person, you know, because, and it literally, it finally all clicked for me, let's call it like last season, maybe even the season before. But I'm like, all right, here I am talking about internal locus of control. What are the things you can control? And I'm like, why am I sitting here in my house in Charlotte, North Carolina, getting mad at the TV over a sports game that I have literally no control over whatsoever? Maybe I could make the argument if I was there in person. Oh, well, I can cheer, you know, or something really loud. But that's a joke too.
Yeah. Right?
But like, it's just one of these things where it just kind of clicks with you one day and you're just like, I can't believe that, you know, I did that. And I would literally, like, man, I could tell you, especially big games or whatever. And of course, you know, as a Michigan fan here the last 15 years, basically, like, there's not a lot of great stuff happening, right? There's not a lot, you know, big games are happening and it's not good for us. And I just would remember, man, I could just like feel my heart racing and just that kind of adrenaline going. I'm just like, what am I doing? What am I doing? I mean, you played the game. Like, what am I doing? I have nothing to do with this. It's bizarre, isn't it?
It is bizarre. I always thought it was super funny that fans got that into it and that invested in it, because there was zero work done on the front end to earn the upsetness on the back end. It's like, what did you do all week to lead up to your disappointment here? You didn't do any of the work. Why are you so upset? But they're fanatics. That's fans. They're fanatics. That's what happens. And it's kind of fun. And thankfully there are tons of people out there like that, because they provided a really nice paycheck and a good lifestyle for our family. So thankfully that exists. All right, Nick. So in the book, 7 Fundamentals of Success, you kind of lay this out: hard work, 1, internal locus of control, 2, positive mindset, 3, discipline, 4, purpose, 5, failure, 6, and then recharge, 7. Which one of those comes most naturally to you? And then which one have you had to work on the most?
Maybe work ethic has sort of come naturally to me. So my dad's probably the hardest working person that I know, like literally built our house that I grew up in, you know, like 1979 or something like that.
With his own hands?
With his own hands. Yep.
Cool.
Yep. Just, you know, as blue collar as they come, 100%. So again, like, I don't know, maybe genetically, I maybe was blessed with that. So that's probably always come easiest to me. I just have always loved pushing myself, seeing what I can do and all that. So it probably come easiest to me. On the flip side of that, the one that's hardest, maybe just the idea of recharge then, because it's all about balance. You work, you don't have that ability to kind of step back and relax and, you know, recharge your own batteries, you're going to run out. You're going to burn out at some point. So I would say that one's probably been the biggest the trickiest one for me to kind of learn and listen. It's still a work in progress. All of these things are still a work in progress. Like that's, yeah. I had one main takeaway, like that would be it. Man, no one's perfect. Doesn't matter who it is. Like they're making mistakes. They're hopefully, you know, trying to get better themselves. Like it's just always this constant process of trying to get better.
Back to the hard work, because as I'm thinking about you as a kid, you're going, well, I'm lucky. And there is a fortune to all of it. Like I used to get a present to NFL rookies when they would come in after I had retired, and I'd do this whole PowerPoint presentation, and I would tell them, okay, here's how much you need to study. Here's what the studying does. We take that game plan, we put it up onto the overhead, and we're looking at the film, and then we go to walk through, and now we get a layer that on top, and then we go into the game, and then we've got all these things that work, and here's how many hours you got to spend, here's your body maintenance schedule, here's the food that we've got to eat. And then at the end of the day, and I always put up a slide of a DNA strand, and I go, you're just lucky as hell. Like at the end of the day, don't forget, you're lucky that your parents' genetics crossed perfectly and made you an athlete with a minimum level of athletic ability, size, strength, speed, all of the things. So you were lucky to have that before you even showed up here. So don't act like you're better than anybody else. How much does luck, in your opinion, factor into any of this? And I know it's hard to say, I'm writing a book on success. You got to be lucky. But I always think like there's so many moments in my life that were almost serendipity. And it was almost like God said, you're going to be an NFL center, whether you want to be or not. And it just kind of happened. It just like things happened. But along the way, like we talked earlier, you're doing the work, you're doing the work, you're doing the work. And you didn't even realize that that work was going to help you in that field that you were getting into. How much do you factor luck into any of this?
It plays a role. It plays a role for sure. I don't think you can say it plays no role. It's one of those things. What's like the popular saying, the harder you work, the luckier you get. I think there's probably some truth to that, because listen, if you're someone that never takes action, you never get going. You never try new things. You never do any of this stuff. You never experiment. You never fail. You never mess up, whatever it is. I mean, you're not going to have any luck because you're not taking any risks. You're not actually out there doing things. But the more you're out there, right, just the more opportunities that are going to present themselves. And then, you know, maybe it falls into your lap and that's truly luck. Or maybe you have some combination of some random chance, but also you have, I don't know, whether it's intuition or street smarts or whatever, but to recognize that it's in front of you and then to take advantage of it. But, you know, even in my book, talk a little bit about luck. And there's one example two examples are given, but you know, go back to like the 60s to someone like Bill Gates, right? I mean, he grew up, his high school was like one of the only schools in the entire country that had, you know, a computer where he could go work on coding and all that stuff. I mean, that's luck. Now he still capitalized on that, of course, but there has to be that. Imagine if you had grown up in the middle of, you know, Nebraska, where they didn't have any of that stuff. And maybe Nebraska's not a great thing because that's where Warren Buffett's from. So, yeah, but whatever, like maybe if he was born nowhere near that, I mean, who knows what his life looks like now. So again, like, I don't think you can completely discount luck because it plays a role.
Yeah. And the environment absolutely shapes the individual. From a physiology standpoint, when you talk about the hard work, I do this with my kids, and what I've been told before, so you can maybe comment on this, is that at an early age, it's really important to develop their cardiovascular system, that it's kind of primed for that. And you can set the VO2 max. I know we have genetic limitations on that, but if they're out running around and doing a lot of distance and just kind of general physical preparedness at an early age, that work capacity becomes pretty large physically. Like we talked earlier, it's like physically ends up translating into the mental side of being able to work hard. So I, in my head, and I don't know if you agree with this, at an early age, these kids got to be outside playing all the time, because play turns into work physically, and then work turns into the ability mentally to wake up every day and just get after it.
Well, I think it's just really important to have kids being active in general. I mean, it's probably a number of factors that are beneficial around it. You know, it's probably just think about my son was just at a birthday party last weekend, and you know, I picked him up, and it was an outdoor thing. They were there for a couple hours, but I mean, he's like pouring down sweat, just like face is really red, and I'm like, this kid's probably been running sprints for like the last 30 minutes. Just think about that. And like, it's fun for them because, you know, they're chasing each other, doing whatever. Like, man, that's just really good. One, mentally, you know, two, physically. And also, I just think it's kind of just building those good habits early on. It's sort of, you know, instilling that work ethic, instilling a little bit of that discipline. Like, I don't want my kids to grow up thinking that, you know, hey, this is just kind of how things are, that, you know, maybe, you know, parents have been somewhat successful, because like, I didn't grow up like that. I mean, again, blue collar,
right?
Middle of nowhere, rural Michigan. Yeah, totally. And so like, absolutely, I make it a point, like I get my kids, I'm like, the thing we're working on right now is, hey, let's work on trying to do a pull-up. And you know, my daughter's 7, my son's 9. So like, they're maybe like halfway there, but it's like just something I want them to realize that when they started, they were nowhere close, but slowly, you know, over time, we kept working on it a little bit each week, kept working on it. So I just, I hope, now again, maybe they just have it genetically. I don't know, because maybe I do, like, I don't know, there's that intertwining, I don't know how it works really, but I want to instill those habits of discipline from an early age. So they just kind of understand the value of work ethic. And, you know, I always try to, you know, just say like, guys, you know, it doesn't matter where you're at now. You just got to work really hard, and you got to, you know, hopefully have a good, you know, mindset around it, but you gotta keep going. You gotta keep working and keep pushing. And like, that's when, you know, cool stuff will happen.
How do you guys treat food at the house? Obviously, get them into the physical side of things, get them doing exercises. They probably see you doing it all the time and want to come hang out with dad. Food's a little trickier. Yeah. How do you guys, and I've talked to Spencer Nadolski about this before. How do you guys do it at the Shaw house?
Oh, by the way, I was literally just on the phone with Spencer before the podcast. He said, hey, so.
Oh, nice.
San Diego connection there. Yeah, man, you know, people like to think that, well, you know, he runs a fitness company, a nutrition company. Like, oh, his kids are probably robots or whatever. We've never really wanted to be like that, because I think if you're so rigid from an early age, just, I don't know, I think you could kind of backfire a little bit. So,
yeah,
you know, do my kids eat, you know, ice cream here and there? Sure, totally. Do they eat, you know, like goldfish and all that stuff? Yeah, totally. Now, that being said, like, we can get a good breakfast in them in the morning. Like, we know lunch at school is going to be a little tricky, so try to pick some things that they like, maybe sneak in, you know, some kind of quote-unquote healthy foods in there, so they get a little something good. And then dinner, it's like, hey, usually we're having some type of, you know, lean protein, we're going to have fruits and veggies, you know, hopefully every meal, and we'll sit down as a family and, you know, try to eat together for the most part. Like, yeah, will we maybe have some fun stuff after that here and there? Yeah, totally. Because like, I don't want kids to, you know, be so rigid that I don't think that's the right approach. So normally I would say it's the 80-20 mindset, but maybe it's more like the, you know, 55-45, something like that. 60.
Especially when they're young.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
It's just, humans are made to survive. Like, especially from 0 to 45, we're made to survive. After that, the earth probably is trying its best to give us this age-related diseases to get us the hell out of here. But especially early on, I think of what I ate as a child. I was coming home after school and dumping probably 4 tablespoons of sugar down my throat and just going out and running, and I'm fine, right? Like, I'm fine. So I do, to your point, agree that the kids have to have some semblance of regulation by themselves. It's got to be an auto regulation to where, hey, can I have a treat? Sure, you can have a treat. Yes. But then you need to know when to put that down. We had a cool moment because we had some Eggos at the house, and our kids were wanting Eggos every morning. Let me get Eggos. Let me get Eggos. Then they were going to school and playing. And my 7-year-old comes home, and at night he goes, Dad, can I not have Eggos tomorrow? Because I run out of energy so quickly. And I was like, yes, felt it. He felt how quickly that carb just burnt up out of him. And it's like, can I have something that's going to hold me over longer and give me lasting energy? It's like, yes, you can, son. And thank you for coming to it on your own. But if they don't have those chances to fail, or learn on their own, then it's just dad's telling me this again, and here we go. And dad has all the answers. You really do. You know, people have to, I think you, there's something to being presented with an idea, but then coming to it on your own instead of, you know, drinking down a fire hydrant of information from somebody all the time.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's something I actually really struggle with as a parent, because it's this really weird dichotomy for me. Cause like on a business standpoint, I know, you know, autonomy is one of the biggest things out there. So like, I'm not going to micromanage people. And then on the flip side, I catch myself doing it all the time where I'm like trying to micromanage my kids. And then I think I'm like, well, I guess, you know, at least with, you know, colleagues at RP, you know, they're whatever 20s, 30s, 40s, like, you know, they know what they're doing. Right. So I don't have to. And I'm like, huh. 7 and 9 year old, like, they don't really know what they're doing. But it's tough, man. It's something that I still battle with a lot, because I know the right answer is just kind of, you know, step back a little bit, let them do their thing, and yeah, they're gonna mess up. And you know, something that, you know, I try to teach my kids all the time, like, you're gonna mess up, okay? You're gonna mess up. Like, you're not gonna be perfect, right? Dad's not perfect, mom's not perfect, and no one's perfect. And so I don't know, hopefully it gets through to them. We'll see.
Hey, I struggle with the same thing. Don't worry. I just got a lecture from my wife earlier today that was like, Nick, sometimes you in the morning, because I'm just a morning person. And so when they wake up out of bed, I'm kind of chomping at the bit, ready to go. And I've got something. I was like, man, I got a little seed I want to give you guys today. And she's like, dude, you got to calm down at breakfast. She's like, it's too much. She's like, can you go away during breakfast and come back afterwards? Like, these kids aren't ready for you in that hours.
Oh man, that's really funny. Yeah, no, same here. It's parenting, man. It's one of those things that's you know, really challenging. It's really rewarding though, but
it is.
Yeah, it's tough. It is really, really tough.
Yeah, it's super tough. And I guess for me, the challenge is like, you want to give them what you've got to get. But then at the same time, I have to realize and keep in mind that in, I don't know, 10, 15 years from now, I want to have a really good relationship with them. And not for when they come around, it's like, oh, here goes dad. Dad's going to beat us down again. It's like, be mindful of the future. It's like, they'll learn things on their own. They'll teach you things. You don't have to teach them everything. You know, set them on that path, but then realize down the line, we're going to be friends, hopefully.
Yeah, man, that's really well said, because I catch myself, you know, like, I feel like I'm learning all these things now. And I'm like, man, I'm like, I'm in my 30s here. Like, I'm just now learning some of these. And I'm like trying to take this. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is, you know, the next greatest thing in the world. And I'm like, I need to tell them that they need to learn it now, you know, at this early age. I'm just like, what was I doing at 9 or 7? I'm like, I was probably, you know, playing Sega Genesis all day. Like, boy, and drinking Code Red. That's the thing when you were talking about going home and, you know, doing all that stuff. I was like, that's the thing that stands out to me from when I was a kid. Like, you remember Code Red Mountain Dew?
Yeah, of course. Look at you. Yeah. You're lucky you still have your teeth.
Listen, I know. Yeah. I think my parents would only let us do that maybe like once a week or something like that. Like, that was a big treat. So maybe that's why it stands out a little.
Oh, that's a good call though. That's like somebody just popping a beer at the end of the week. It's like Friday's Code Red Day.
Something like that. For sure.
Have at it, kids. So Nick, what's next for you guys? What's next for you personally? What's next for RP? What do you guys got going on?
We have some, you know, cool app updates coming out with the RP Diet Coach app. You know, again, it's just taking the feedback that we're learning from people, and people just want a little bit more flexibility here and there to be able to tweak things around a little bit. So we're building in more of that. And really just at the end of the day, we're just always trying to get a little bit better. So that's, you know, people ask, hey, where do you want to be in 5 years? I'm like, I don't know exactly where we'll be, but I just know we kind of have this big North Star that we're just going to keep aiming to get a little bit better. New updates coming out every few months. And if we keep doing that, we're probably going to end up someplace cool in a few years.
Well, I have to imagine, based on where you came from and where you're at already, I can't wait to see what transpires over the next several years. And yeah, well, it'll happen. I mean, you've got all the fundamentals down and practice them every day. So
yeah, we've got a great team. We've got a really, really great team. Mm-hmm. And it's actually something I'm really grateful for. You know, I don't know if I can take credit for it. Yeah, it seems like everyone really gets along well. And again, like, we've been totally remote. We've always been really remote. And, you know, just everyone on our team really gets along well. They're all just really, really good people, just kind of all really focused on, you know, RP and fitness and all that stuff. So it is really cool. So I'm super, super grateful for all that.
And I think one thing you guys all have in common is that you all kind of have that servant mentality. You're there not for to serve yourself. You're there to serve others. And I think that's noticeable. And I think it's really helpful.
Yeah, that's something. I mean, again, it kind of seems counterintuitive, but when you really stop and think about it, it's not counterintuitive at all. Because if you help other people, you know, it becomes a win-win. And when you think win-win, good things are going to happen.
That's right. Nick, where can people learn more? Where can people follow you?
So if you want to check out RP, just go at RP Strength on Instagram. Me personally, at nick.shaw.rp, or go to rpstrength.com. It's probably the easiest spot.
Awesome. Thank you, Nick. So blessed for your time, and people, go out and get this book. It's one of the better self-help books out there. I'm telling you, it's good stuff. Thank you, Nick.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it.
All right, buddy. Hey, have fun with Rich.
Yeah, we'll do.
Yeah. And leave a little meat on the bone, man.
Yeah, I'll try, man.
Right on. Have a blast. Thank you, Nick.